This is DW News, live from Berlin. Narendra Modi's Hindu nationalist BJP declares victory in India's elections. So first results show the Prime Minister's party heading for an increased parliamentary majority. So how will a Modi second term affect the country? Also on the programme. Polls open in elections to the European Parliament. One of the first countries to vote is the UK, which had planned to leave the EU by now. Populists look set to make big gains as the situation for the country's beleaguered Prime Minister, Theresa May, gets even worse. And as Germany celebrates the 70th anniversary of its constitution, DW profiles the citizens who rely on that constitution every day. You meet a former Iraqi who's relishing his constitutional right to freedom of speech. And FIFA abandons plans to expand the already troubled 2022 World Cup in Qatar. The usual 32 teams instead of 48 will try to win football's most coveted trophy. I'm Phil Gale. Welcome to the programme. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi's party, the BJP, has declared victory in the country's elections. Preliminary data released by the Election Commission shows his party on course to increase its majority in Parliament with a mandate of business-friendly policies and a tough stand on national security. He was given a rousing welcome by BJP supporters at a rally in Delhi just a while ago. In a message on Twitter earlier, Prime Minister Modi promised to unite the country and build what he called a strong and inclusive India. This after he ran what commentators called a divisive campaign.
The sounds of victory. Across India, people have gathered to celebrate the leader of the Hindu nationalist BJP party, Narendra Modi. Already during the last hours of the vote count, it was clear that the current Prime Minister's party would emerge as the winner of the countrywide general elections.
This is not only Modi's victory and BJP's victory, this is the victory of people of India. The democracy has won, an honest government has won, and this has proved that we can win across all caste, all religion, all creed lines.
So I am also supporting Mr. Modi because he has done so much for the country. Down the line 10 years, if you go and see, there was no improvement. There was nothing in the world we used to hear about. And there is so much of change in India right now.
India's general elections took place over the last 6 weeks. It's the largest democratic ballot in the world. After reports about some election tampering, the opposition asked for a recount and verification of the results with paper records of the votes. International observers say the election was, though, largely free and fair. And the ruling party says the opposition claims are just a distraction. Modi campaigned hard to keep the commanding majority he won in 2014. He's promised better incomes for farmers and more infrastructure spending. But question marks remain over India's slowing economic growth and Modi's attitude towards the country's 200 million Muslims. For now, Modi's many supporters are celebrating 5 more years of his leadership.
So let's join DW's Nimisha Jaiswal in Delhi. Welcome, Nimisha. So Modi's already claimed victory and it looks like the celebration party's just getting started.
That's absolutely right. Modi has claimed victory. The Prime Minister has been given the mandate for another 5-year term. Now, of course, the results are only about 30% in, but the leads look pretty reliable that the ruling Bharatiya Janata Party is not only going to win more seats on its own, it's actually going to win more seats as part of as the overall alliance as well, almost claiming 2/3 of the house. On the streets of Delhi, there were thousands of people who poured out, dancing, chanting, playing the drums and celebrating the victory of Prime Minister Narendra Modi. He is seen as the icon that represents the Bharatiya Janata Party. This victory is expressly being attributed to the Prime Minister. Even during his speech, he was continually interrupted by fans, by supporters, chanting Modi, Modi all across Delhi. Also, we have seen posters go up within the last few hours with images of the Prime Minister saying, thank you, voters, thank you for your blessings, thank you for supporting a new India. So definitely the Bharatiya Janata Party jubilant right now. They made history in 2014 and they seem to have improved their score in 2019.
So was this election won on campaign issues or was this all about Modi?
Well, when it comes to campaign issues that the Bharatiya Janata Party put out there, I would like to compare that to the opposition, which had several schemes that it proposed in its manifesto. It spoke about minimum income, it spoke about a separate budget for farmers, but none of that is important right now. The opposition is entirely decimated. And while the Bharatiya Janata Party highlighted its achievements, what it claimed was its achievements, the main plank was nationalism. There was a standoff between India and Pakistan earlier this year. The Prime Minister was seen as having taken decisive action by carrying out airstrikes, according to India, and this actually shored up his support all across the country. The Prime Minister in rallies said a vote for the BJP is a vote for the Prime Minister directly. So even when we met people on the field who were not that much in favour of their BJP candidate, they still wanted to vote for the Lotus, the symbol of the BJP, simply to support the Prime Minister. Now, in the victory speech that he just made, he has thanked the people, the youth, the farmers, parts of the population which are actually seen as critical of him, but clearly that hasn't really come through. And the Prime Minister has repeatedly emphasised that this is a victory for India. He tweeted about this, he's talked about this in his speech. He has said this is not about a political party, this is not about one man, this is a victory for India, almost equating himself to the country, to the good of the whole country, but it does look like the voting population agrees.
So Modi's fortune is very much on the way up. What about the Congress party? Rahul Gandhi has lost his family seat. This great dynasty appears to be very much on the decline.
Well, on the decline would be putting it mildly, I'm afraid. It looks like so far the Congress has put out, Rahul Gandhi, the president of the Congress, has put out a statement conceding the family seat that you mentioned that has been lost, but a proper concession should be expected just a bit later this evening. Now, the Congress, while it went all out, at least by the looks of it, on the campaign trail, criticizing this government for being divisive, for not delivering on its promises, for being corrupt. None of these allegations seem to have stuck. This government, this party itself, the Indian National Congress and the opposition, has barely managed to shore up its current seat share. There are questions being raised if they can even lead the opposition. And even the regional parties that were expected to play an important role in this election, the so-called kingmakers potentially, have been wiped out. The Bharatiya Janata Party not only doesn't need the regional parties to agree with them, they barely even need their allies, because right now it looks like they're going to push past 300 seats. They're going to actually increase their tally just individually, and they have a coalition to back them up, which will make it very simple for them to lead the country for the next 5 years. So it's time definitely for the Indian National Congress to introspect. Some are saying the party is actually dead because of the kind of results that have come out. The leadership will have to introspect. The entire opposition will have to introspect about what exactly went wrong, not only in this campaign, but over the last few years. Why were they absolutely unable to raise anti-incumbency sentiment against Prime Minister Narendra Modi?
DW correspondent Nimisha Jaiswal in Delhi, thank you so much. Now to some of the other stories making news around the world. Calm has returned to the Indonesian capital, Jakarta, following deadly clashes between police and supporters of defeated presidential candidate Prabowo Subianto. The former general called on his supporters to go home and announced that he would launch a legal challenge against President Joko Widodo's re-election. The man known as the American Taliban has been released from prison in the United States. John Walker Lind was captured in Afghanistan in 2001 and pleaded guilty to supporting the Islamic fundamentalists. He has served 17 years of a 20-year sentence and has been released early for good behavior. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo described the release as unexplainable and unconscionable. The author of the much-loved children's book, The Tiger Who Came to Tea, has died. Author and illustrator Judith Kerr was 95. Born in Berlin, she fled Nazi Germany with her family and wrote about her experiences in her novel When Hitler Stole Pink Rabbit. Over the next 4 days, 400 million people will have the opportunity to vote in elections for the European Parliament. The Netherlands opened the voting today. The first Dutch voters headed to the ballot boxes at midnight. Voting comes as support is surging for populists and nationalists who want to rein in the European Union's powers. Voting's also underway in the UK, although more than half the country did not want to participate in the first place. And politicians are still engulfed in political turmoil over Brexit, as Prime Minister Theresa May is once again fighting to keep her job. Straight to London, then. We join DW correspondent Barbara Vasil at a polling station there in the city. Welcome, Barbara. What is the mood there, given that... And how do people feel about these elections happening at all, given that the country was supposed to be out of the bloc by now?
The mood, of course, as was to be expected, Phil, quite subdued. You can stand for like half an hour in one of the polling stations, like this one here behind us in the center of London and Westminster, and there's just a trickle of people, two or three maybe, walking in and out. So there will not be a large turnout, it is to be feared. And yes, of course, this is a rather absurd situation, because Brexiteers had believed fiercely that they would have been long since out of the EU. We remember the date was the 29th of March of this year. And on the other hand, the Remainers, they had fought and hoped for a second referendum. And that is not yet to be seen either. So both sides have been disappointed in a way. And so they are just dragging themselves in small numbers to the polling station to participate in this European election, where they think they are going to send MEPs, which will just maybe be there for a few months and then have to return home.
And are people very polarized there?
It's incredible. We know how much Brexit has torn the country apart. And we've talked to people here, and it's the same picture. Nothing has changed. I mean, there is just no coming together again. The Brexiteers are fierce, and they say all we want is out. And of course, we know that the Brexit Party here has fought a rather fierce election campaign. They've been out with Nigel Farage at their top, and they even want a hard Brexit. They say, let's just turn around and slam the door on the EU and be done with it. And the Remainers, on the other hand, I mean, they are trying to vote for different parties, and they are sort of giving their votes to the Liberal Democrats, to the Greens, to those that promise that they really want to remain in the European Union, send a clear message. And those two camps have absolutely nothing to do with each other.
And given that the ruling Conservative Party is projected to take a beating in these elections, are they actually bothered about this result?
Of course, for the Conservative Party, this can be a bloodbath. I mean, some of the projections talk about single-digit results, which would mean they could come out in fifth place after the Brexit Party, Labour, the Lib Dems, and some other smaller parties, which then would be the message for the Conservatives to finally pull the plug on Theresa May. So bets are up, and the atmosphere here in Westminster is somewhat febrile whether Theresa May is going to survive this week or the next week in the office of Prime Minister. And the best description came from a senior Tory who said she has pushed the sofa against the door and barricaded herself in within 10 Downing Street. And now we all wait for her to emerge. Finally, she will have to come out in front of the door. And then the Tories, with their hatchets, are waiting for Theresa May.
And I just wanted to ask a wider question that goes across the bloc. That there is a growing feeling across Europe that its institutions are too far removed from their lives. Do MEPs who are going to be voted on over the next few days, do they actually have the power to solve people's problems?
they don't really. I mean, they some of them are really have really fought hard to sort of be heard and to come across with a message that they could do something in Europe. But the atmosphere is so divided in the country that the anti-Europeans will not listen to anything. I mean, no argument gets through to them. And the Remainers, of course, they come from the exact opposite position that they say, we're only strong if we stay together with our neighbors. There seems a more rationed approach. And those two sides don't meet. And for the MEPs, it's a pretty impossible position. Plus, they don't really know how long they're going to stay in Brussels. Is it even worse taking up the fight and going into battle with the newly emerging populists on the extreme right? And nobody knows that. And so it is a really it's a task for them that doesn't really carry a lot of importance in the eye of the British public at large.
Barbara Vasil in London, thank you. Celebrations to mark the 70th anniversary of Germany's post-war constitution have begun in the capital, Berlin. Known here as the Basic Law, it came into effect to this day in 1949 under the supervision of the Allies. It's now considered the foundation of German democracy. Official festivities are being marked in front of the Brandenburg Gate. Attending those celebrations, German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier noted that his countrymen know too little about this hugely important document. So all this week, DW has been looking at how people translate the Basic Law into everyday reality. Today, we focus on the guarantee of freedom of expression. We met with Ahmed Sherwan, who's originally from Iraq, to see how he uses these rights to say what he wants and to provoke.
I left my country because of freedom of expression. It was always and still is very important to me to be able to express my opinion.
Ahmed had to flee his home in Iraq because he wouldn't shut up. In Germany, he's protected by the Constitution. The Arabic word on Ahmed's t-shirt is kafir, infidel. The 20-year-old is an atheist, and he talks openly about his opinions on faith and other matters. Sometimes he wants to provoke. Here at a Palestinian march in Germany, he's carrying a poster of two kissing men. There's pushing and shoving. A police officer steps in to prevent violence. He's not welcome.
For many Muslims, it's a taboo. Sometimes you have to be provocative and cross boundaries in order to change something in society. I'm from a religious family. There were certain rules about what you could and couldn't do. It was somehow clear to everyone that you couldn't be different and you couldn't think differently. At one point, I thought it had to be possible to say that you were no longer a believer without being punished. Then I decided to do it for myself. It was 5 days after my 15th birthday when my father suddenly went to the police. He came back with three police officers. They beat me in front of my parents. Then they locked me in a room for hours. They tortured me with cables and electric shocks. That was the day I left Iraq. We took this picture at night with a photographer. At first, I didn't want to tell my story in Germany to avoid more conflicts and so on. But at the same time, I knew that if you express your opinion in Europe, the state will protect you.
Ahmed says Muslims in Germany abuse and threaten him when he openly expresses his opinions. But here, unlike in Iraq, he's protected by the police.
Ich habe ziemlich
I've sacrificed a lot to be here, and I won't let anyone here tell me how to live and what I'm allowed to do, and especially what I'm allowed to say. I am free.
Now, the share price for Deutsche Bank is trading at its lowest price ever. So there was little to celebrate at their annual shareholders meeting today in Frankfurt. Adding to the dire news, ongoing litigation against Deutsche Bank and a failed merger with a German competitor, and investor confidence is at an all-time low.
Deutsche Bank shareholders are unhappy. The share price has plunged into the cellar. It has been trading slightly above €6.40. That's its lowest level in more than 45 years. And shareholders are losing patience. A lot of things went wrong at Deutsche Bank in recent years. I hope they can get back into shape. The expectation is that something fundamental changes, something at the core.
And I think Mr. Achleitner should take his seat and step down from his position.
Supervisory Board Chairman Paul Achleitner and CEO Christian Sewing are blamed by shareholders for the bank's disastrous performance in recent months. Some large shareholder groups want to withhold giving official approval to the board. That would be a slap in the face. The CEO says that would be completely unjustified. We have brought Deutsche Bank back into the black. We have reached our goals. We now have the fundamentals for a sustainably profitable bank. But there's a lot of work to be done. The investment banking unit is enormous, and it hardly makes a profit. And Deutsche Bank faces lawsuits for alleged money laundering and interest manipulation. That costs money and hurts the bank's reputation.
Now, if you ever visit Hong Kong, you're likely to encounter mahjong. It's the city's favourite pastime, played on the streets and in gambling rooms, which are often illegal. The game is so much part of the city's identity, officials declared it part of Hong Kong's cultural heritage. But the game's decline began almost as soon as the government made that announcement. So today's youngsters prefer their cell phones and video games, which, of course, eats into mahjong time, and into some traditional crafts.
A master craftsman at work, Chen Shun King is one of Hong Kong's last remaining mahjong carvers. In his tiny store, he engraves every tile by hand, an anomaly in an era of mass-produced plastic. When you look closely, you can see each handmade mahjong tile is different. It's because I carve them one after another, completing them one by one instead of using a mould. The 65-year-old has spent decades honing his skills. His mahjong sets start at €350. That's 10 times the price of machine-made tiles. Even so, he still struggles to make a living. Now there are only one or two stores in the area and business is poor. It's because the younger generation doesn't play mahjong that often. Even if they do play it, they play on their phones. But some young people still like it hands-on. Here at Hong Kong's Chinese University, members of the Mahjong Society meet every Wednesday. The game has been played like this for more than a century. The engravings etched into Asia's cultural bedrock. I think the hand-carved mahjong tile is a form of art, something to appreciate and collect, almost too precious to play with. Cheng Sheng King wants to keep that tradition alive. He hosts workshops to share his passion for mahjong carving. It's a steep learning curve for these casual students. You have to pay close attention to how to exert your strength, how to make a presentable and perfect line. I even have to pay attention to my own posture.
Once you try, you know, hacking away at it with one of these, then you can see the intense skill it takes just to make a few strokes and to get something so beautiful out of it.
Stroke by stroke, Chen Shengqing is making sure that Ma Zheng stays in Hong Kong and, wherever possible, stays handmade.
Now, FIFA have abandoned plans to expand the next World Cup tournament from 32 teams to 48. The change would have required Qatar to share hosting duties in 2022 with other countries in the region. But political tensions made that impossible.
Adding 16 more teams to Qatar's World Cup in 2022 was a bit too optimistic. FIFA President Gianni Infantino's idea of the expansion will have to wait until 2026 as scheduled. FIFA wanted neighboring countries like the UAE to help host the tournament, but an economic blockade in the region against Qatar showed no signs of being lifted. FIFA therefore released this statement. Following a thorough and comprehensive consultation process with the involvement of all the relevant stakeholders, it was concluded that under the current circumstances, such a proposal could not be made now. Qatar was open to being the lone host for the potential 48-team contest, but couldn't find a viable operating model to sustain the idea. Building its World Cup infrastructure almost from scratch has been and continues to be a tall order in itself. However, construction for 32 teams seems to be on schedule.
We have now six more stadiums to go. By the end of this year, first quarter of next year, we'll be launching two stadiums as well. By 2021, all our stadiums will be ready.
There was already controversy surrounding the 2022 Qatar World Cup, including allegations of human rights abuses towards migrant workers, the heat, and changing the date to a late November kickoff. But local football fans are excited. Qatar won the 2019 Asian Cup and gets to host a World Cup on its own, with any risks now reduced.
Now here's a reminder of our top stories at this hour. The party of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has declared victory in the country's elections. First results show the Hindu nationalist BJP increasing their parliamentary majority. Polls have opened in elections to the European Parliament. That includes in the UK, after the country missed its original deadline to leave the EU. The election there is being overshadowed by growing calls for Prime Minister Theresa May to resign. This is DW. Next up, focus on Europe, including a look at life in the forbidden zone of Chernobyl. We'll be back at the top of the hour. Have a good day.
Visa video and its consequences. A political bombshell in Vienna. Austria's government is in chaos. What role, if any, did the intelligence services play in this scandal? And how close are the right-wing populists to Russia?
Next on DW.
Journey begins with the first step, and every language with the first word.
Hallo, ich bin Nico.
Nico is in Germany to learn German. Why not learn with him? It's simple, online, on your mobile, and free.
Du schaffst das.
DW's e-learning course, Nico's Weg, German made easy. Earth. Home to millions of species. A home worth saving.
Those are big changes, and most start with small steps.
Global Ideas tells stories of creative people and innovative projects around the world. Ideas that protect the climate, boost green energy solutions, and reforestation. They create interactive content, teaching the next generation about environmental protection. Using all channels available to inspire people to take action.
And we're determined to build something here for the next generation.
Global Ideas, the environment series of Global 3000 on DW and online.